Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and this podcast is ranked in the top 2% of the most popular podcasts globally. And honestly, it's all because of my guests. They are incredible. And I am honored and blessed to share time with people who are at the top of their game. And they show up here willing to help you get to where you want to be in life and in business. Now, my guest today is David Green, who is the world's first silent TEDx speaker, having spent 300 days in silence to deepen his meditation practice. Now, he's a former bond trader and a successful entrepreneur, and he founded a niche finance business that achieved over 100 million pounds in sales before retiring at the very young age of 42. And now with over 27 years of meditation experience, David has trained with Himalayan masters and is passionate about helping others achieve meaningful success. He is also the author of The Invisible Hand, Business, Success, and Spirituality. And I have that book in front of me. And he's a contributor to HuffPost and Thrive. And as a business and spiritual success consultant, David empowers busy professionals to integrate meditation and mindfulness. Mindfulness is a big word. We talk about that a lot these days. Into their lives, promoting a holistic approach to success and well-being. And as a vegan for over 25 years, he also advocates for vibrant health and personal growth. Good morning, David. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Denise, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Look, I read it and I reviewed it. I'm fascinated by it. And I think I shared with you in the green room, I have never been able to meditate worth a darn. So this was pretty helpful for me. But before we get started, David, tell people a bit about you, about yourself, and how you show up in the world.
Sure. Well, from a young age, I observed my father struggling as an entrepreneur. So my desire to succeed in business started at a very young age. I was shipped off to boarding school at 8 years old, which wasn't so easy, but the home life wasn't so easy either. And I was quite a shy person up to about 14, and then I came out much more. And I was, I suppose, quite driven from a young age to be successful in whatever I was doing. I aimed to win as much as I could. And if I came second or third when someone was better than me, then I accepted that. And I always looked at people who are better than me. What can I learn from these people? So this is where I went up to. And then we had jobs in the holidays. And I think that's what really helped me a lot as kids, teenage years. We had many, many jobs. And this gave me a good feeling of what the workplace was really like. So at 18, I decided not to go to university, and I went into the City of London, into merchant banking. Then I went into bond trading, and then I started my own business at 23. So that's a brief summary of how I got to that moment.
School. I don't know much about boarding schools other than what I've read, but I have to tell you that just the thought of sending a young child away to a school makes my stomach hurt. And I'm sure there's good reasons for it, but it doesn't seem quite natural to me.
I think that's a fair point. But from my father's side, and the home life was quite difficult with my mother, in one way I had an opportunity, and my father was never educated, so he wanted to give the opportunity. If you like sport and these type of things, then boarding school was a very good way to do that. And there was less distraction. Now, of course, the emotional side, if you're at boarding school, it's its own little mini universe, and you learn very quickly when to speak, when not to speak. So that has pluses and minuses that goes with this later. So I think you're right on balance. I think most of the boarding schools today, the kids go home every weekend, whereas in my day, we went home every 6 weeks for a weekend. So you have to learn how to survive. That's the positive thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there is that. I mean, you are in a kind of a small microcosm, I guess, of what the world is going to be.
Exactly.
Interesting. David, you started meditating at the heart of your, at the height of your career when you were stressed and burned out. Let's go back to your career very quickly. And then what led you to saying, oh, this is going to kill me. I need to meditate. I need to calm down. At what point did you say, I can't do this anymore?
Well, when I started my business at 23, I'd only been working full-time for 5 years, but as I said, I'd been working in and out from 8 years old. So this gave me a good feel of giving a service, how to speak to people and how to deliver in a very small way. And I suppose, as many entrepreneurs are, I was quite driven. So I was driven to succeed and to build a business, but I wanted to do it in an honest and ethical way. I wanted our clients to love us. I wanted to deliver what we promised and over-deliver. Now, stress creeps up on us, doesn't it, Denise? We don't really realize it's there. But by the time I was, I suppose, 30, 31, the stress was there. And it goes hand in hand with building any business, as anybody will tell you. It's very hard to find balance. It's very hard to not work all the hours. It's very hard not to go in the morning when it's dark and to leave when it's dark. And this is how the life became. So there's a price for success. And success, of course, is subjective. It doesn't have to be financial. And then a friend of mine had been running around India, and he introduced me to meditation. And I believe nothing, but I went on the path of meditation. And I saw that it worked. So then I practiced it every day. I was lucky enough to meet different masters from different disciplines, mainly from India. And I just proceeded. But what I noticed is that by meditating even 30 minutes every morning, it gave me more juice to feel, to be successful in the day and to have the power. Now, of course, physical exercise is important, but we have to exercise our mind and we have to learn how to relax the mind. And meditation is a natural tool to do this, but it doesn't happen on day one. It took me 5 years to make meditation the same as brushing my teeth or taking a shower. So they required a lot of effort. So that's how it began, Denise.
And I love that story because, listen, I frequently say this. I like the idea of meditation. I'm not good at it. I'm really not. My brain, I have a chicken brain. It just keeps on going. Yes, squirrel brain, whatever you want to call it. And the minute, and I figured out not so long ago, I was doing it completely wrong. But the minute I try to sit down and clear my mind, that's not going to work. My brain is not going to allow that. And I would either fall over and drool because I would manage to put myself into a sleep meditation, I guess. Or I would start think, oh, I have to add this to my Thanksgiving grocery list. Doesn't matter if Thanksgiving was a week ago, I'll still build that same list that I have built for years. It really doesn't deviate much. So I've tried different forms of meditation and I found that if I was walking with my dog, and I live in a very quiet neighborhood, thank goodness, but if I'll walk with her late at night or very early in the morning when it's dark, either way, I'll fall into what I call a walking meditation. Now that works for me because I'm moving. I'm not going to fall over and drool. In fact, I've actually walked past my house a couple of times because I was so deep into whatever was in my head at that time. But just sitting to meditate doesn't work for me. It never has. I don't think it ever will.
Well, meditation, there's the practice of meditation, which you choose a technique, and then there's a state of meditation. And what you're perhaps doing is when you're walking with consciousness, you might be watching your breath, you're getting in a rhythm, you're finding stillness inside the mind, but that's physical. But that is a form of mindfulness. Now, when we meditate deeply, There's no sense of the body, no sense of the mind. Now, I think perhaps you've shared something which many people have. They try it, but the mind is busy. And what I teach people is to say, so what? If the mind is busy, so what? There's actually nothing new in that, but we're more aware of it when we go inside and we stop and we sit still. What I would say is practice, practice, practice each day, a little each day. And it's not just watching the breath going in and out the nostrils. It's not just sitting straight. Inside the breath is, in India, they call it prana. So it's the life force within each breath. Because we're not just living off oxygen. If we were, then our body would remain forever. Something stops, which is when we leave this world. Now, if we focus more on that prana and feel that energy within each breath, then slowly we become in tune with that, whether you call that our true nature. Some people more spiritual may call it the soul. The soul is moving, the soul is breathing. Whichever way you look at life, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter our beliefs. But slowly sitting silently, we get some calmness. It takes time, but don't be put off by the thoughts, Denise.
And I thank you for that, because I do want to sit quietly, which is not difficult for me. I'm often very quiet in front of my monitors. I'm a web developer by trade. There's no noise going on in my house. I need to focus. I need to concentrate. And every once in a while, I'll realize that I'm in kind of a, not a daze or a doze, but my hands have lifted off of my keyboard. I'm no longer focused on that code or the graphic, whatever it is that I'm doing. And I'm thinking, but they're calm thoughts, more deep thoughts, more spiritual thoughts. I actually call those God winks. That's when something will just kind of download into my brain. I'll say, oh, there it is. And I'll write it down. It woke me up sufficiently and I go back to work.
That's beautiful. I think there's, it's interesting. Paramahamsa Yogananda, he wrote a book called An Autobiography of a Yogi. And at Steve Jobs' funeral, every person was given a copy of that book. So Steve Jobs was following this. And what Paramahamsa Yogananda said is prayer is when we talk to God and meditation is when God talks to us. But when we're meditating, there's a silence and a stillness. Now, sometimes we lose a little consciousness and we don't know where we are. But slowly, slowly, we give calmness to the mind. We're looking after our body. We're cleaning the body. We're very particular about that, perhaps how we dress, how our hair is. Not such a problem for me, but we're very external. Now, when we go inside, if we can help the mind be a little calm, it means we're more creative, we're more productive, and we make better decisions. When our life is in chaos, the mind is in chaos. When our breath is fast, the mind is fast. So when we're slowly meditating, without controlling the breath, when we sit silently still, the breath will find its rhythm. So there's no effort in meditation. We just need a little discipline to hold the mind and grab the mind. And by doing that, we can be successful in whatever we do in the world. If the mind is ruling our life, we have trouble in our life. If we get hold of the mind, then life can be very beautiful and we can get the success, whatever that means to us, whether making a great cake, whether helping people, it doesn't really matter. But we can't do it unless the mind is a little calmer.
Sense to me. And after I read your book and we had a wonderful pre-interview, and I've always wanted to look more deeply into meditation, but it's one of those things, I've got it in my head. I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. And I start whining. But I realized after reading your book that I actually, when I'm in the shower, I'm meditating. I mean, my brain is clear. There's no phones ringing. I don't have to go look at anything. I actually take bathtub crayons into the shower with me. Because again, that's where God winks happen. I'm calm. And I take showers hot enough to steam broccoli. So you can about imagine hot water. And it relaxes me. And I start getting these downloads is the only way I can, God winks. And I have learned that, you know, we all talk to ourselves. We all hear ourselves speaking to ourselves. And I've learned to determine if I hear myself say or think, well, I'm going to do this. That's my ego. That can be discarded. But if I hear we can or will do this, that's a God wink. That's spiritual. And I write those down.
Beautiful. What you're describing really is also learning which thoughts to reject and which thoughts to take and grab. Because our mind, I think there was a scientific study many years ago that we think about 60,000 thoughts and a day, and about 80% are negative and 90% are repetitive. So if we take that as a, I think it's quite hard to prove, but someone did a study. But when we look at our mind and look at our lives, how often are we thinking about the past? The past is gone, it won't return. How often are we dreaming about the future? So if we're spending our lives like this, instead of saying, okay, I have a target in my life, I want to achieve this, then proceed in the present. Don't waste the time. Living a life of regret never takes us far. But if we fill ourselves with positivity, and this also helps, meditation helps, mindfulness helps, we suddenly realize which thoughts are helping me, which thoughts are not helping me, which habits are helping me, which habits are not helping me. And we can make excuses all day long, but ultimately it's our hand that feeds the mouth. So if we snack away sometimes, which I can also be one of those people, if you're watching a soccer match or whatever it is, we have certain habits, don't we? Because we want to feel happy. And this is what meditation helps with. We feel that the happiness comes from inside. Where we are today comes from inside. And what we attract is down to us to a large degree. That energy, we're only energy, aren't we? We're only cells, atoms, and molecules. And
people,
we attract.
You know, say, oh, you know, but it's my body. Yeah, but your body is made up of energy.
That's right. And it's also, so what I'm saying is, how are we using the mind? Because if we want to be successful, we have to grab that mind. Meditation is the magic pill to purify the mind, to help the mind be still. But don't expect a result in 5 minutes. If we start meditating, say in my case at 30 years old, it won't take 1 minute. You can go on many courses. You can find different techniques. It takes some time. So I was a disciplined person. It took me 5 years for it to become natural. I'm just hitting 30 years of daily meditation. I still don't know anything. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. Sometimes the mind is
going. But isn't that why we're here? You were supposed to learn and grow.
Absolutely. So that's what we're doing. But sometimes stopping in our life, when the life is chaos, we hide behind the chaos. We don't change the things that we know we need to change. So we hide behind a chaotic life. So I always say, take control of the life. And if we want meaningful success, then we need to be full of love. We need to be full of faith. We need to get something from that success. And for me, that's freedom. And if we can do it with consciousness, helping other people, serving other people when we work, then that's the icing on the cake.
And to me, and I'm learning more and more about myself, and I will until the day I pass from this earth and go to, I don't know, another dimension, another plane. I don't think we just disappear. Energy doesn't just disappear. I don't think. But I catch myself thinking, okay, Denise, what are you thinking about? Why are you thinking about that? Is that important? But what I've learned is what I need to pay attention to is gratitude, massive gratitude. And what am I thinking? Listen, I'll be honest with you, because, you know, you mentioned that we talk to ourselves sometimes in ways that are just not good. They're not healthy. If somebody in my local Walmart parking lot spoke to me in a way that I will sometimes speak to myself, I would need bail money. I'd be in jail.
I think it was Viktor Frankl that said, there's so many people criticizing me, I don't criticize myself.
Sounds like something he would say. And it's so easy to do. I mean, it's easy to walk past a mirror and go, oh, I look like crap today. Well, guess what? You just gave yourself a headache.
Yeah.
Stop it. Just stop it.
There's nothing wrong with being kind to ourselves. And I think in my case at boarding school, you forget all of this to a large extent. If we're in a business world, we have to hold back the emotions because we have to be rational. And that has a balance, doesn't it? If we're too emotional, not good. If we've got no emotion, that's not good. So how do we find the balance? And again, meditation slowly helps to give this balance, in my experience.
Tell me about your unique perspective on blending career success with meditation, mindfulness, and healthy living. Listen, I'm in America. We are becoming a grossly overweight nation. It's unusual to see a child, a young child, that is not huffing and puffing and just chubby as all get out. There's something so wrong with that.
I travel quite a lot, so I see different countries. And it is interesting to see how young people are. And of course, America is so diverse. You can go to LA, you can go to New York, you can go to where you are. It's like so many mini countries in one country, all speaking the same language.
In Southwest Louisiana, we've got Cajun country, which is where I am, is Cajun. And then we've got New Orleans, which is a whole different language, is Creole. And then if you get up towards Shreveport or Arkansas, you can't understand a word they say. So it's very different from town to town, practically.
I think going back to your very good point, why with so much technology, with so much advancement, why are people getting sicker and sicker? It's because we're not living a natural life. Firstly, are we living indoors or are we living outdoors? If we're going to sit and not burn any calories and we just watch TV all day, then we're naturally just going to eat more. So what is the balance and what is the environment? If we live near the sea or the sand, we tend to want to go out more. How much oxygen is around us where we live in the cities? You can tell such a difference going to different cities, how the oxygen is, how is the mood, how is the energy, how are the people? And of course, we inherit, sadly, often the bad habits from our parents instead of the good habits. So we learn this. And our parents, if you like, are the first gurus for us, aren't they? So they're our teachers. Guru just means teacher. Gu
oh,
and
I
ru.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Guru
so gu
means,
means
teacher.
Invisible and ru
Okay.
means visible. So,
oh.
So on a spiritual point of view, you find a spiritual guru, he shows what is invisible makes it more visible. This is my interpretation. There's two separate Sanskrit words. And if we look, we are, where do we come from? It is our genes, our conditioning, and our effort. If we look at our life, we have an effect from our genes. Our conditioning is what we've been taught, what we've seen. What we're eating through our eyes, what we're eating through our ears is just as important as what we're eating through our mouths. And then probably half is to do with our effort. Whatever our genes, whatever conditioning, where we are today will be a large extent towards our effort. Did we break away from the habits of our parents, which may not have been good? Did we grab the good habits of our parents or did we rebel against that? So this is a yogic philosophy, genes, conditioning, and effort. What is the balance of those? That's where we are today. And if we don't like today, then what will we do today which will change tomorrow?
That goes back to mindfulness. And I wrote something down while you were talking, as we were talking about habits and the things that we do. And habits are hard to break. They're not difficult to start, but they're hard to get away from. I had a business coach many, many years ago, and she asked me a question that had me just, I was silent there. I couldn't even respond to it. But I must have been whining about something. In fact, I'm sure I was, and probably the same old stuff she'd already heard. And she was very patient with me, but I think this day she just finally had enough. And she said, Denise, I said, yes, ma'am, because I could tell by her voice she was about to get me. She said, Denise, what are you tolerating? Well, that opened up a whole new can of worms. So I ask myself that frequently. What am I tolerating? Have I slid back into an old habit that was just didn't really serve me, but it was easy? Have I created a new habit that's great, but I'm not quite there with it? What am I tolerating? And I think if you'll ask yourself that regularly, you'll have a whole laundry list of things that you need to get rid of.
Yeah, it's an interesting word to use, not the one that I would use, but it's a very good description. I think the other thing, going back to whether we're living naturally or unnaturally, is we become so used to stress, we become so used to feeling unhappy, we begin to think that life is normal. We begin to think that that is the normal way of life, because we may ask our friends, and the friends are often similar to us. So it is a big effort to make changes, but we should do it slowly. So if we're going to give up cigarettes, we'll just smoke one less a week than we normally do. So go slow. Be kind to yourself. Very rare does it happen that we can give up a habit straight away. Although I did give up a packet of cigarettes a day when I was 21 going into the bond market. So I did give that up in one day because I thought, I'm strong. If I'm going to be a trader, I'm going to be able to stop any bad habits. I did put on weight though, Denise.
I grew up in a house of smokers, and I was the only one that did not smoke of my parents and my siblings. And my mother asked me later on in life, because she died of lung issues, and she said, Denise, why did you never smoke? And I said, three reasons. Number one, it stinks. Number two, it's ugly. Number three, it didn't make a lick of sense for me to put something on fire in my mouth and suck it into my lungs. She said, good enough. That was the end of that conversation. But it stinks. I mean, the stench is just horrible to me. When I smell somebody that comes past me in a grocery store and I can see, I know they're a smoker. It's your business. I don't care. But I choke. My sinuses immediately stop up. It bothers me physically.
Yes, but what you did, isn't it? It's interesting to see what we were just discussing. You didn't pick up one of the bad habits of your parents.
It didn't make any sense to me at all. No.
That's great, isn't it? So already you were making your own decisions. And you are the best guru or the best teacher is us, isn't it? The best answers to our questions are the ones that come from us.
And here's another question for you. In meditation, and I'm guessing because I'm still working on how I meditate, how I calm my brain down. But do you find that when you're quiet and you've gone within and you're not very distracted by the world around you, do you find that that's where your curiosity really sparks? You have questions?
Not necessarily.
Really? Then I'm still doing it wrong.
No. One thing to pick up on, you said about you're trying to calm your mind. So this is a common. I will use the word mistake or a practice. The job of the mind is to think. Let it do what it's doing. When we're the witness to the mind and witness to the thoughts, then we get some detachment. And that's what meditation helps to see. If we get a pain in the body, we say, I have a headache or I have a pain in my leg. This body, as we said earlier, is impermanent. The thoughts are impermanent. So we're attaching to impermanence, aren't we? Something that won't last, hopefully. Hopefully, we all go through life, good and bad, don't we? And none of it lasts forever. It never stays bad, hopefully, forever, and never stays good forever. So we oscillate, don't we? And meditation, we get calmness going through. Now, what happens in the stillness, if we get into that meditative state, in fact, afterwards, you don't want to speak. We don't really want to move. We don't really want to go into the outside world. But this does not happen all the time, and it's a rare thing. So the people practicing meditation, if your mind is going, You have full permission to say, so what? Luckily, our thoughts do not all manifest. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a pretty world, would it, if all of our negative thoughts manifested?
Oh, it would be awful. Worse than it is now.
So we pay too much attention to the mind. When we're asleep, some of us sleep fully, don't we? What happens in sleep? We don't know our name. We don't know we're a body. So this is the best way to describe a slightly deeper meditative state. When we're in that position, you don't know where you're sitting. And this happens. But it doesn't mean that that's the purpose of meditation, because meditation is endless. Experiences come and go in meditation. But slowly the change will come. Slowly we begin to think, you were talking about people overweight. Slowly we might think, what am I eating? Should I be cooking natural food? Should I buy organic food? Or should I just buy food in a packet and wham it in the microwave? So slowly consciousness comes when we meditate. You're walking more mindfully. You're thinking about, what am I doing? What am I thinking? So this is the journey. It takes a little time, but we should be gentle and kind to ourselves and don't give up. If we want to succeed in life, no one remembered the person that gave up.
And you said something about, you know, life, we're always in flux. We're constantly in flux. And I will hear people say, oh, I'm having the worst day. I'm having the worst week. And I don't just want to say this. I have been known to ask, really? All 24 hours? You didn't have a break? Really? There were no moments of pure happiness in there? Did you spend some time with your kids or the dog? It was horrible all day long, and they have to go, well, you're right. It was just pockets of, oh, that sucked. But most of the day was okay, but they got fixated on the garbage stuff. I'm guilty of it myself. Until I sit down and say, well, what really happened? Because at the end of the day, I always write down, this happened, this happened, this happened. Here's my gratitude. Well, let's not do that one again. And I have a track. I say, okay, that happened. Doesn't have to happen again tomorrow. And it wasn't an awful day. It was a little stressful, maybe a lot stressful, but it was not a bad day.
This is the mind, isn't it? That's what we're talking about. When we say I'm unhappy, it's the mind or the body. So the mind is the key. The mind will trap us, or the mind will set us free. It is possible to change our lives. It's possible to succeed, even if we've failed in many, many things. If we pick ourselves up, if we're enthusiastic, if we're smart, we can succeed in whatever we want. And that mind is a beautiful tool. We just have to grab it. I think it was Beetlejuice, the film, when the skeleton is driving the taxi, and then you grab that skeleton, that as if it's your mind, and then it will go where you want it. But if we allow the mind to take us to chaos, mm-hmm. and think that everything's bad, that think that our life is more difficult than other people, then it doesn't look good, does it? And then life goes quick, doesn't it, Denise?
Oh,
TikTok,
yeah.
Goes the clock.
Yeah. But I'm going to go back to gratitude. Without gratitude, you're just a miserable bag of bones. So you have
Absolutely.
To concentrate, I think, on what you're grateful for now, in the future, in the past. And I calm my brain with that. My mind is very, very busy. So, and sometimes it's hilarious in there. Other times I'm like, what the heck? What are you thinking about? But I have to tell you, I'm always entertained by what I'm thinking about. At some level, I'm going to find something that is just exquisitely funny. And I'll laugh myself out of whatever blues I've got.
I agree. When I was running my business, and as a business grows, as everyone will vouch for, the bigger you get, the more the trouble, the more the hassle. You'll get a new problem every hour. It doesn't matter what you do, how well prepared we are. And in the end, you have to laugh and you think, gosh, that's a new problem. And this is how I try to do it as well. Of course, I was in finance, it's quite a serious business, because if you send money to the wrong place, it doesn't come back. It's not like you're selling shirts. You send out three instead of two. So there's a great pressure on being precise and not making mistakes. And this is about preparing ourselves the best we can in business. But humor is important. People want to deal with someone who's got a little personality. And I agree. I love humor as well.
Was born. My mother said I was very snarky even as a baby. She said that my very first word was no. And she said I said it with tremendous verve. No. I wasn't going to do it. Wasn't mom or dad or cat. It was no. It's still my favorite word. And I use it a lot. Mostly I use it on me. Denise, no. Let's think about something different. Yeah, you have to constantly be monitoring. I have to monitor what I'm thinking because what I'm thinking is how I'm feeling. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. We are what we think. We are what we observe. If we're thinking, oh, geez, I've got a headache, you're going to have a headache. You just gave it to yourself. You have to be careful what you're thinking about, in my opinion.
I think there's a few movies and books inside of Denise, the nerd in stilettos.
Who knows? I mean, it's an interesting brain in there, I'm telling you, but I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. But I wanted to ask you, because you work with people to help overcome burnout and stress. So how do you work with people? I mean, let's talk about that, because I know a lot of people are listening to this going, I need to know more. Where can I find more?
Well, I do on Sundays in the UK. I run Zoom meditation classes. Mm-hmm. I've got a masterclass workshop mid-September with some breath work, how to master the mind. So I go in and out. I find that if I have a blank sheet, people come, people arrive. And I think that I meet people everywhere, even on aeroplanes. I've taught people to meditate, strangers on aeroplanes. I've taught them in cafes, all sorts of places. So if you've got a desire, the opportunity will come. I can be found on LinkedIn. I don't have a website at the moment. And I think you can't help anyone. We have to help ourselves. And if someone can point out perhaps some possibilities from what you're being told, get people thinking, get people changing their life that they're not happy with, then I suppose that's how I work with people on a personal level. And with entrepreneurs, I saw tens of thousands of business plans and sets of accounts. And business is really straightforward. We can see where we're going right and we can see where we're going wrong. But to make the change is not so easy when we've started. Mm-hmm. Again, I do that with people. But you can't have any ego, because it's difficult, isn't it? When you set up a business, you might have been going for 10 years, and then someone comes along and says, oh, what about this? What about that? We can take it very personally. But I always sought advice from a handful of people. It's no good asking 100 people if they don't know the answer.
Right.
We may not like the advice, but if we want to proceed, we cannot do it on our own. Otherwise, set up business in a desert and see how you go.
And the thing,
Denise, I lost the audio there.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Now I can't remember what I was talking about, but I lost my own train of thought.
Silence destroyed all thoughts, Denise.
It
You're the proof.
Did. But what I have found, and you were talking about asking for advice, and I will often ask for advice. I didn't used to. My ego was sufficient that I didn't need to. I was the boss. I was also the bottleneck. That's another story. But I have found, and I think maybe this is kind of just normal with people, they'll get some advice, solicited or unsolicited, and their back will go up and they're like, I don't know. They don't say anything, maybe, but I will often say, most of the time, I say, well, listen, let me think about that. Because either my ego has hit me right in the head with it and I don't want to hear it, or it wasn't what I expected to hear. There's so many reasons But once I sit down with it and really kind of parse through what was said, I find the nuggets and I get out of my own way. But I don't take advice immediately. It's just not smart, in my opinion.
No, it depends. It depends how desperate we are and what situation we find ourselves in. You know, I've come across people, I've helped people where they've got huge debts and they won't take the calls, they won't open the letters or the emails because they can't face the situation. So at whatever point it is, we have to, in our own way, as you said, you can contemplate what someone's advised you. But ultimately, we can't have any ego. If we're in trouble, we should put up the hand and ask for help. The secret's asking somebody who really knows the answer. And that's not so easy in this world because there's many advisors on how to be happy, how to be coached, many, many people advising. So how do we choose the person? I always try to choose the person that's been up the mountain and come back down in one piece.
You don't want anybody whose bones are still up there at the top of the mountain, right? We have talked about, you have mentioned breath work a few times. And breath work to me is very, very important. As I mentioned, I grew up in a house of smokers. What I didn't mention is that we all have, it's a lung disease that we were all born with called bronchiectasis. I was told, because I was prone as a very young child, I was prone to pneumonia. And I was told when I was 15, when I almost died, that I was to never smoke. And I said, well, that's not a problem. I never will anyway. But I realized then that if I didn't take care of my lungs, my brother just passed away. He was a double lung transplant. My mother had lung problems. They all did, but they all smoked. I mean, my siblings quit when they were young, but they still did smoke when they were younger. And I pay a lot of attention to how I'm breathing. And I will, do you do this? You'll catch yourself really concentrating on something. I'm a web developer. I'm in front of monitors all the time. And I will realize that not only am I not blinking, I'm not breathing. And that scares me. I'll have to jump up and go outside and, dig my toes in the grass and start doing some breathing exercise.
Denise, you're a natural for meditation, so I'll invite you to one of my sessions with pleasure because you're a natural. So
I
what
would love
happens
to.
when we're stiller, we blink less, we breathe less. An average person will breathe about 16 breaths a minute. And if we observe nature, which animals live the longest? The tortoise, the whale, they're breathing. Sometimes they don't have to take a breath for 45 minutes, the whale going under, maybe longer. So the animals that live the longest are the ones that breathe the less. A rabbit will breathe, I think, about 35 breaths a minute. A dog breathes a lot more, the cat breathing less. So if we observe nature, if we're breathing too quick, if we're angry, we're agitated, what happens to our breath? It's not rhythmic, it's agitated, and that's not good for any of our body. But what happens as we get in a
These are
rhythm, so you're
rough,
saying when you get in your own zone,
right?
you get in a rhythm, don't you? Like when you're walking, I'm in my own zone. When I'm working, suddenly I'm in the stillness. You're just doing, aren't you? So this is what meditation helps us with. So you're doing a form of meditation already. You're a natural. You're bringing that into your daily life, which is really what it's the step from meditation and mindfulness. You can't do one without the other.
No,
Meditation is a purifier. Mindfulness is carrying that through a day.
and as we talk about that a lot, you and I, if you have to pay attention to how your body is reacting, to what your breathing is doing, on just about everything, you have to be mindful. And I think so many people aren't. And I'm going to use the iPhone. Yeah, everybody and their grandmothers, we're going to be a nation of people with, what do they call it, dowager's hump? Where you're bent over, you can't, your neck won't straighten out anymore. You've got this big lump behind the back of your neck. I see kids getting off of the school bus. They're coming down the steps. They're not looking where they're going. They're bent over their phones. They're not speaking to one another, and they don't look healthy. And that worries me a lot. But they're not mindful. You know, anybody could come. I live in a very quiet neighborhood, so nothing's going to happen to these kids, I don't think. But if somebody decided to go around that school bus, and he'd knock out three kids in a row because they weren't looking, they weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
It's scary. It's frightening. I mean, these little kids, big kids, adults, they're so glued to those phones. I want to say, you're going to, oh, too late. You already walked into it.
Yeah, the phone is the modern day guru, isn't it? It's become the
It
modern day
is.
lover. It's
I
become
don't
the
keep mine
modern
near
day
me.
entertainment.
Yeah. You know, I've had a phone for years and years and years. I don't give my cell phone number to people, and I don't have it in a room where I am. I use it when I need it. I'll go find it. I use it, and then I put it right back down. I don't want it near me.
Yes. But going back to the breath, because you brought up a good point, how do we breathe, or how should we breathe? And what breath work can we do? So a meditator will breathe in and out of the nose very gently. They'll find a rhythm. There'll be no force. And it helps to breathe where there's oxygen. So you open the window. I tell people you need to shut the doors before you meditate. So you shut the door to the room. You open the window. You close the eyes. You're closing the ears, the senses, the nose. You're not smelling like mad. You're closing it. You're closing the mouth. So you're shutting all these doors. And then slowly, the breath will find a rhythm. You talk about smokers from your family. How is their breath? Their breath, they're coughing. They can't breathe the oxygen. But observe the agitation of people, angry people. Their breath is all over the place. And if you go to a Ayurvedic practitioner, this is from India or in the East, you'll stick out your tongue, they'll take your pulse. They're observing the very simple things about how is the whole person, how is the breath, how is the mind. So the answer's all inside. Do we help ourselves? Do we do what is good for us?
Right.
Or do
Right.
we do what is bad for us? Choices.
In a hurry. I think the more stressed we get, the more we hurry, we hurry, we hurry, then we tumble into bed and we're exhausted and we can't really rest. It's a process, and we have to find a way to stop it. I don't know about you. I lucid dream. I always have, which I find interesting. In a way, it's a form of meditation for me as well, because I will literally tell myself before, I don't sleep a whole lot. I sleep in fits and snatches, like 2 hours here, 3 hours there. If I sleep for 8 hours in a row, I probably should go to a doctor. I'm sick. I've always been this way. But before I'm about to go to sleep, I will turn over whatever it is. I need a question. I have an answer. I need a question. I have an answer. And I will turn it literally over to my subconscious for review. And I'm saying it out loud. So God can hear it. My spirits can hear it. My subconscious can hear it. And at 3:18, this is no joke. 3:18, it doesn't matter if I went to sleep at 1:18 in the morning. 3:18, I wake up, the answer's there, I write it down. But I'm lucid dreaming, and I can literally say, I don't like where this is going. And I can stop in the dream, almost like changing a channel and redirect. Is that something that you do?
To be honest, I sleep like a log.
I don't. I hate you.
When I worked crazy hours, I put the head down, gone. 6 hours enough, generally.
I hate people like that. They just, I can't do it. What do you mean you're asleep? What the heck?
The yogis describe us as having three bodies. We have a physical body, an astral body, which is what you're perhaps talking about, which is the mind. The mind is still going. It is like an invisible body, and the causal body, the cause of everything. So if in your case you're connected to that astral body, that mental body much more, it's been conditioned that you wake up at 3:18 in the morning. But the good thing to do at that is to meditate for 5, 10, 15 minutes. It's a perfect time to meditate if you're getting up that early, Denise. All I'll teach you with pleasure.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Well, I won't teach you, but I'll give you some suggestions.
Oh, I would
you can
love
try
that.
it, and then in a month you can tell me if it's changed at all.
I will. I will often, because when I wake up, it's like, okay, I wrote it down. I have choices. I can stay here and try to meditate, which, and I don't use that term, but, think gratitude. What am I really thankful for? Or I can get up and go make a gumbo, which I have been known to do. It's not unusual to find me in the kitchen at 3:20 in the morning.
Wow.
I know. I'm not insane, truly. I'm not. But
Only
this is
nearly.
how I've always, just a little bit.
That's right. We all have our insanity, don't we?
We do. We do. So I wanted, we've only got about 8 or 9 more minutes.
Wow.
I wanted to ask you, how is integrating meditation into your life and your leadership style allowed you to balance business acumen with personal well-being? Because clearly you've done very well doing this.
If I'm honest, it's very hard to find balance when you're an entrepreneur and your business is doubling every few years. It is very hard to keep the balance in the day. Because the nature of this world is stress. The nature of success is problems. We have to find solutions for the problems. But my only savior was meditating each day. If I had to go to a meeting after a 3-hour drive for 9 o'clock, I'm up at 4:30 meditating. It didn't matter. So that discipline of doing it each day helped me a lot. People ask me, David, now you've meditated all these years, if you set up a business, would it be different? I'd like to think so, but ultimately, even, setting up a new website or trying to speak to some helpline, thousands of miles away where they don't understand you, it's not easy getting things done, is it? It's not even easy getting the simplest things done. And I would always say, if people are setting up a business, do something that solves a real problem, because there are many problems out there. You don't have to have an original idea. You just need to find the space, which is where that word entrepreneur comes from, entre, between, prendre, the French, to take. There's always a gap in the market. Today is always the best day to start a business, because the bigger companies get, the more impersonal they get. So how do we integrate a healthy life with this? Physical exercise, oxygen, healthy eating. Nothing new, is it? We're getting told this everywhere. But do we do it? That's the main thing. I didn't have a microwave for many decades. One day it exploded and there was a little fire inside of it. And I'd only started meditating for 2 years. I thought, oh, there's a message there. If you've got any food, just reheat it with a little stock. And it's this, are we living healthily? Or are we living unhealthily? And everyone has to answer their own question. And how great is our pain and suffering? We talked about what do we create?
Go ahead.
We create our own pain and suffering. Does it have to get so bad that a doctor says, I'm sorry you had a, God forbid, a heart attack or something like this. Now you need to change. So do we have to wait for that? Or do we do it before?
We do it before. Nobody wants to go to the doctor and have them say, are your affairs in order? You just don't want to hear that. Let's talk about water. And this is, I just threw it into my list because I drink a lot of water. I love water. It doesn't matter if it's well water, tap water, it doesn't matter. But I notice that people are drinking soda. They're drinking, and I don't have any problem with coffee other than I can't drink it, because it just chews my stomach up. But I drink a lot of water and I drink a lot of tea. And honestly, I think I'm healthier for that. You don't find soda in my house. I don't eat sugar. I never have liked it. But water, what do people have against water?
I don't know. Most people I know drink water. But I think the type of water you drink does make a difference. So I try and get it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What do you recommend?
Well, I'm not a nutritionist or a health expert, but I don't like buying water that's been manufactured or bottled by a very large company or two that sell fizzy drinks.
No.
I prefer to find it where it says it came from the mountains or came from the natural spring. and also drinking it from glass bottles rather than plastic bottles. But yeah, one of the yogic practices is to drink water only maximum, say, 1 hour before a meal, a large glass of water, always at room temperature, but never during the meal, and then wait for half an hour afterwards. So this is so we don't clear the saliva, so we get good digestion. As you brought up water.
Yeah, and see, I didn't know that. I drink water all the time. I mean, I drink it. I've got it sitting next to my bed. I've got two giant mugs of ice water sitting here underneath my computer monitor. If I can't find water, I'm panicking. I've always just loved water. And you're going to think I'm a total lunatic. When I'm drinking my water, I'm also telling it thank you. Why not?
I can't remember his name. I think it was a Japanese man. He did experiments on water crystals.
Yep.
You can find him. I
know what you're talking about. Yep.
So he got people to say, I love you to the water. And the crystals showed beautiful patterns. Whereas if you said, I hate you to the water, it showed terrible patterns in the crystals. So yeah, water carries energy, and
there's
a lot of water in us.
And if you dump that dirty water that you just said you hate into a plant, you're killing the plant. It's fascinating. But fortunately, water has always been my beverage of choice. So I'll drink it wherever I can find it.
Yes,
Well,
and just going back to what you were talking about, integrating it. You mentioned at the beginning about I gave a TEDx talk in silence. This is because I spent 300 days in silence. I went off, no TV, no friends. I went to a foreign country. No one knew where I was. And I had no agenda, just to see what was the experience like. And in that experience, I did dream every night. So this was one change. But what I took from sitting in silence, walking in silence, if I can give a summary of what that 10 months gave to me, which might help other people, if even if they sit for 5 minutes a day, is that what I realized is that as I was walking in silence, because I walked each day, I noticed that my eyes were judging people. Look, what's that person wearing? What's that person doing? One woman was leading a cat on a dog lead, taking the cat for a walk. So always we judge with our eyes. And the second thing I realized was that we give away our power too easily. If someone says something to us, we get agitated. Why? Why do we give our power away so easily to others? And then I realized also that silence, we get much more into our true state of calmness. Now, you don't have to go and do 300 days of silence and meditate 4 hours, 6 hours a day, but you'll gain a great deal, just even 15 minutes a day of sitting quietly, meditating.
To ask you, once you noticed that you were judging, what did that, did you change from that? What happened?
Yes, of course, because once you go in silence, like you're talking about sitting silently for meditation, the mind is going, isn't it? And there's no one, I'm not talking to anyone. So that mind is going up 1,000 miles an hour. And it's looking for distraction from the silence. So of course, this is one of the benefits. I could see what's going on inside. And also I could see, how do I feel about David? And luckily I like myself, because it would not be possible to go through that experience without feeling good about yourself.
It would not.
Now, I did have around 90 days. I did have 3 or 4 bad days. Now, of course, during the 300 days, I did keep a diary, which I never did before. I did have good and bad days, naturally. But around 90 days, I had 3 or 4 days of doubt. What am I doing? What's the point? You know, who am I to sit and meditate? I'm not some master from India. And so I had a great deal of doubt. But what I learned was, just be the witness. That's only the mind. Why should I grab that thought? So I watched it. And this would be something that perhaps helps a few people. When we're having a really bad time mentally or in our lives, just be the witness to that. Don't take ownership of it. Just be the witness, because everything passes.
Tell us about your TEDx.
Well, when I came back, I live in a place called Guernsey, which is a small island between England and France. And when I came back, after maybe a week or two, I met a friend. Of course, I found it very hard to speak after being silenced for 10 months. I began to think, forget if words existed. So this did happen to me also. And this friend of mine was arranging the TEDx here, and he said to me, David, will you come and give a talk about silence? And really, I was quite feeling very introverted and not really wanting to speak that much. And I also didn't want to do a talk as if I had achieved something by doing silence, because that was not the purpose of it. It was really an experiment for me. And so I said, okay, I thought about it and I said, okay, I'll deliver it in silence. And he said, oh, that'd be fantastic. And so we created a slideshow. And what I did do is I got the whole audience meditating for a few minutes. I think it's on YouTube somewhere, the video. And there was not a sound in
Amazing.
the room.
I know. I watched it when we first spoke, and then I watched it again this morning before we jumped on this call.
Funny enough, the talk before me was about infidelity. So they had been shocked in one way. And then I came along, I wasn't talking. And they found that strange. And then I said, then the screen behind me said, okay, we're now going to sit and meditate. And really, I don't know. I think there were about 500 people there. There was not a sound. Everyone was still. So if a whole room of people can do that, listening to different talks, we can all do it if we want to. And of course, we have to know why are we doing it. And that's really my message. There is a benefit to sitting silently a few minutes a day. There is a benefit of meditating. And I'm the least likely person. If you knew me when I was younger, I was dogmatic. I just wanted to succeed in business. I wasn't interested in anything esoterical. So if it happened to someone like me and I got the benefit, it can help everybody else.
Absolutely fascinating. And you know what I really have taken from this is that I do know how to meditate, just not in a way that I thought I had to. So that has been very, very empowering for me. So, David, thank you for sharing your very inspiring journey and your insights with us today. But before I reluctantly let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
Contentment is the prize of success. That is the prize. If we're going to work hard for money, then save some of it. Otherwise, we're trapped forever. So get freedom, get contentment, and then we can be in that stillness. If we're never content in life, how can we be happy? And it's possible.
And it took me a very long time to figure out that I was essentially a happy person. I was just cranky a lot. And you would think
Frankie is
as
good.
though cranky can be snarky too. But once I figured out that I actually really like life and I like the way I operate in life, it was just so much easier.
Can't remember who said it, but it was might have been George Burns. He said, "You have to be yourself because everybody else is taken."
Or maybe it was Gracie, his wife. Who knows? But yeah, could have been Gracie. Well, listen, David, thank you so much. And to our audience, in our conversation today, David Green shared his remarkable, truly remarkable journey from a stressed out entrepreneur to a meditation expert and a business consultant. And he revealed with us, to me anyway, to all of us, how daily meditation transformed his career, bringing peace, clarity, and enhanced decision-making abilities. And his unique approach integrates business success with spiritual growth, emphasizing personal development and meaningful achievements over mere financial gains. And his 300-day, I'm still shocked by this, 300-day silent retreat and his 27-year commitment to meditation have shaped his leadership philosophy and helps him foster resilience, balance, and a long-term perspective. And he attributes his success to a combination of grace, effort, common sense, that's important, and meditation. And I would add critical thinking skills. We all need that. And that highlights the power of inner resources in achieving both professional and personal fulfillment. So if David's insights have inspired you, I encourage you to connect with him on LinkedIn or visit Amazon to purchase his book, The Invisible Hand, Business Success and Spirituality. And if you have enjoyed this episode, please subscribe. I can't even talk now. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. Your support helps me continue bringing you conversations with remarkable individuals like David Green. So thank you for listening, and I will see you next week. David, again, thank you so much.
Denise, thanks so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it has been my pleasure.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.